This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, I'm going to be chatting to Lilo Faure, who was the 2017 Roma Foundation USDF Hall of Fame inductee. And then we'll have an excerpt from Johan Hinnemann, the presenter at the 2018 Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference. And we'll begin with some news in just a moment, but before that, I'd like to remind you, as always, that the views of the guests and the hosts of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. The USDF Regional Adult Amateur Equitation Program is the newest opportunity for adult amateur competitors competing at all levels. Adult amateurs may qualify to compete in a USDF Adult Amateur Equitation Regional Final Class, which will be held at each of the 9 USDF Regional Dressage Championships competitions, by earning a 70% or higher in any dressage seat equitation class held at a USDF licensed or USDF recognized competition, or by qualifying to compete in the regional championships, excluding freestyles. And for qualifying opportunities and additional requirements about the USDF Regional Adult Amateur Equitation Program, please visit the website at usdf.org or follow the link in the show notes accompanying this episode. And I'm joined now by our first guest this week, Lilo Faure, who was recently inducted into the 2017 Roma Foundation USDF Hall of Fame. Lilo, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I'm sorry you're having a rough patch as we speak today, but hopefully it will pass very quickly. But I do want to congratulate you, first of all, for being inducted into the Roma Foundation USDF Hall of Fame. Have you allowed yourself a moment to reflect on what that means to you and really look back on your career and what made it so significant to have gained this recognition?
Well, first of all, it was a very amazing surprise because I think there are many, many people who, you know, in my opinion, do as much as I do. But, you know, and most of those people I know who I think deserve it just as much as I do are most of the time my friends and close friends and colleagues and co-workers. And, you know, and they are just as passionate about the riding sport, the equestrian sport, than I am. You know, it's an amazing honor, and I think it's just, you know, it was a little bit like I didn't expect it. So it was kind of like a dream come true, because when I think about, or when I think back of where I came from and where I am now, it's an incredible journey. And the journey has been, I think, successful due to the fact that you know, someone has to learn to listen, and someone has to learn to be a good team player, and someone has to learn to, you know, enjoy the sport as we do, and then also realize that the only way the sport can go forward and be successful and continue on for more generations to come is also to give a little bit back and work at it. So that, I think, is probably the reason that I did get inducted in the Hall of Fame, because I am having a little bit of a foot or a hand, as you want to say, in just about every door. You know, I learned how to teach and train, and I taught many horses, and I love teaching and riding, and I, you know, of course, then went through the judges program, got my foot in the door in the judges world, and climbed that ladder gradually and continuously. But it is an honor, I think, you know, to be even just asked to be inducted in such an amazing place. So it's very special, and I take it very serious.
Well, it certainly is recognition for all that you've done for the sport. I want to just look back on your career, really, where you turned the corner when you said how much you enjoyed training horses and coaching people. But then your other life, of course, as a judge and an official, That's not for everyone. I mean, a lot of people just stick with training or coaching. Is this something that you prefer to do, to be a judge? You know, if you had to pick and I was to say, okay, you can only do one or one of these or you can't do both, which one would it be?
Well, I have to say the training of horses, the teaching of people is probably more my passion. So the judging, in my opinion, is kind of like that star on top, which I think is a end product of knowing what horses and riders should do and are doing, and the appreciation of people and riders to be in the arena due to the fact that I've been there. You know, it takes very hard work to be even just be in the arena and, you know, and do a good job there as a trainer and rider, and then get your points from a person sitting at sea, and that appreciation from this particular person, which is our official, you know, then gives me that star, which kind of tells me if I was right in my training and teaching. So I think the judge's license is, in my opinion, a very important step for anyone to take if the sport is what they love doing. But being a judge is not as easy as people think. And I think a lot of people do know, but I think many people do not know how much pressure there is on an official sitting in the judges' boxes. Because, you know, let's face it, we are telling countries, literally, and nations and regions of who the best ones are and who are second and third and fourth. And you know, there is a big responsibility to pull forward the best in the world and making sure that you don't make a mistake in the boxes and, you know, being very, very, very focused every ride that comes in front of you. And you know, to be able to give these scores to people. And, you know, some people think judges are like a little bit of a god sitting there, but really, I don't ever think of myself that way due to the fact that even now, have gone through all the steps of judging, sitting in the box still gives me goosebumps in some ways due to the fact that, you know, it is an amazing, difficult position to be in, but also it has amazing rewards. But it is definitely, as you said, not for everyone.
When you look back at your career, do you have maybe three highlights that you could think of that you're most proud of, Lilo, when you look at your career?
Well, you know, I mean, I was a trainer just as much as I was a rider. And, you know, I think it starts with being the rider and then producing horses. And I think, you know, the first time that when I rode a horse and I ended up on the long list and short list as a rider with homemade horses, I've ridden I've ridden from 3 years on and all the way brought them to taught the FEI levels. And, you know, and bringing forward a lot of horses, going into the Horse of the Year awards and winning these championships, you know, that, of course, for a rider is the highlight. For the trainer, the highlight is when you see your people going the same ladder and being successful and doing an amazing good job in the show arenas. And to also, you know, in my opinion, to be able to do these competitions, but also looking at your riders and knowing that they're doing the training in a very wonderful, humane manner, you know, without abuse to the horses and really riding them with feel, and then still coming out, you know, pretty much on the top list and doing a good job in the arena. That's, of course, for a trainer, for a coach, one of the most important parts. So I have just as much pleasure and seeing my riders go down the center line now than I did when I did myself going down the center line. And maybe I have to say, I maybe even enjoy that even more so when I see my people doing it now. So that is, of course, my highlights. As a judge, I had many highlights. I had, you know, many wonderful experiences as judge. But the highlight there, of course, was when I, ended up with my 5-star, even though it was in the later years. But my colleagues didn't let me get away with not having it at the end of my career. And I do want to say I appreciate their amazing, you know, willingness to put my name forward and thinking that I was good enough to do so. And then, you know, going and doing one of my biggest shows right away in the first 2 years of my five-star recognition, I did the big word equestrian games, you know, which have, we had about 100 and something horses in the Grand Prix from all different nations, and being able to sit in the box there with the top judges in the world and being one of them was, of course, an amazing highlight. And then, you know, I was asked to be the president of the Grand Jury for the World Cup in Las Vegas, and I mean, oh my God, can I do that? You know, the responsibilities are tremendous, but, you know, those are nervous situations. I mean, you know, you have goosebumps and you have, you know, you want to make sure that it's done right and that you are, again, doing a wonderful, doing a good job. And you know, it's a tough situation, but it's a definite amazing highlight, and I enjoyed it tremendously. So these are, I think, probably the highlights in my career as a rider, trainer, and then the coach, you know, having riders go into championships and getting also to Pan American Games and going to international CDI competitions and you know, and doing well and being successful in these shows is an incredible opportunity to say, wow, I think I maybe did do a good job. So those are wonderful moments, and I think that is really what keeps a trainer and a teacher and judge going when they see these successes in your own students, in the horses you trained. And, you know, I do a lot of education also of judges, and then you see your young judges climbing the ladders from L to small R and large R's and becoming S judges. And then some of them even now, you know, then climb the ladder to FEI. And I mean, it's an incredible journey you see in front of you, and you say, wow, did I really help with all that? And, you know, it's quite incredible.
It must give you an enormous sense of satisfaction and pride, too, when you see how your contribution has been so recognized now.
Yes, it definitely does. You know, I never think of what it could do to me, per se, you know, but I think others do that for you. You know, I'm a little bit like a worker bee, you know. I just kind of go where I need to be. I teach what I need to do, and not just because I must, it's because I want to. You know, I step out of my house here and go to my barn and to my arena, and I have my students come in. I mean, every day it's like a new day and a new hopefully success. And I have never yet gotten tired of it. So, and I'm 73 now, and I still enjoy it just like the first day I did.
That's wonderful. And I'm sure, though, there were moments, as there are with all of us with horses, where you, especially being a judge, that you would think, oh, my goodness, there are things that do go wrong. And you're in the limelight. You know, you really are very much in the hot seat. Do any of those come to mind when you look back now at what you've achieved and the places you've been to, the people that you've met and those moments?
Yeah, I think being now a retired FEI judge, I think I wrote in a small article and something, you know, what I'm missing really is, and we're working on it in the USEF a little bit more to see if that would be a possibility to accomplish. It's really, I think, what makes a judge a really, really good judge is to be able to be and having to be responsible for what they're saying and doing in that box. If a judge judges too much always by themselves, I think, you know, in that moment you become maybe a fraction, and I don't say that they do it on purpose, but you become a little bit, how do you call it, you know, there is no other person who says you're right or you're wrong. As an FEI judge, when you go to the levels and in also sometimes as an S-switch, because some competitions you do have to be in panels. It's the panel judging itself. To sit in those boxes with your colleagues around you, and, you know, and you are having the responsibility to make sure that you really, truly stick to a good, you have to have your standards, and you cannot change the standard. But you also never stop learning. And the discussions which are possible when you are in the boxes as an FEI judge per se, you know, when something goes wrong, and believe me, every one of us has been there, you know, you feel terrible. You know, you think, oh my God, what have you seen? How come your score is a little different than theirs? Why is it? And you have the chance then to go to your colleagues and say, look, that is what I saw. Was I wrong here? Or what, did I take it too serious? Or did I not take it serious enough? And, you know, and yes, we're sitting all in different point of views. And, you know, and we do have to, but still have to come up with somewhat of a close standard of all of us and making sure that we bring the right person forward. And once in a while, it has occurred to all of us, you know, that we may were not quite right on a rider or something, and, you know, and said, Jesus God, what did I do there? You know, was I not paying attention there? And, you know, was I maybe a little too harsh or too tough on that particular rider? And I forgot to look at also some of the other things. I try always as a judge first to always look for the good parts. You know, I try very hard to always see the positives, and then I take the negatives into consideration, not the other way around. And I preach that to everyone, may it be my students, may it be my trainers which I teach, may it be the judges I work with, because you always have to see the positives before you look at the negatives. You always want to see and find the positives. And then you take the negatives and you modify your score from that, not the other way around. And I think that is one of the most important parts. And I think that makes one a good teacher, a good trainer, and a good judge.
Well, that leads me very nicely into my final question before we let you go. And it was about some tips for being a good instructor and a good coach. That clearly is one of them. Put the positives first. Is there anything else that you would recommend that coaches should really focus on and make their priority?
Well, in my opinion, I mean, one cannot really be a teacher and a trainer unless, in my opinion, really, and I'm talking about it's an instructor and a teacher, say, you must be able to have written it and trained it before you can also teach it. So you have to have the feel on the horses, and you have to written it, you have to train it before you are able to put it forward to your student. Coaching sometimes can be just a fraction different. You know, and in some countries, I think coach and teacher is the same, but sometimes I think if you're coaching, it is more like you detailing the ride a little bit. You know, a judge sometimes may not have ever ridden, say, a certain level, but they can still have a good eye on the ground, and they can say, look, you know, this is not enough, this is this, but they would not be able to really tell a rider how to do it. The only way you can tell a rider how to really truly improve it, I think you have to ridden it and trained it. Then you can also become that trainer and teacher and be on top of that also then a good coach. So, you know, it is very hard to teach what you have never known. So you know, one can be an eye on the ground, but that is still not truly the teacher. So that can be a coach, you know, sitting on the sideline saying, you know, the angle is too steep, you know, really the horse is not really on the bit enough. But unless you have had to put a horse on the bit, then you cannot tell the rider how to do it. But, you know, nowadays, of course, our judges programs, you know, very much require that riders, that judges which go to the levels have to written that level as well, so that they are, you know, really skillful and knowledgeable of what to put on the test, etc. Even though you don't put training tips on the test, you only there you say only you write down what you observe. But if then that rider comes to you, for instance, in a clinic, of course, then you have to be able to say, look, the reason that test didn't come up is because this and this was not quite sufficient enough. But it still comes back to, I think you have to understand that everything takes time, patience, but horses don't have a clock. You cannot say, I need to show the horse third level next month. You know, they don't read the books. You have to be able to give the horse time to climb the ladders. You have to give a horse time to develop gymnastically and musculature. It's not just even the good mover. It is also the mental capabilities and the mental progress in horse and rider. So it's not just that they know how, but also, you know, their mental capabilities must be there, just like the physical capabilities. So you have to be able to look at a horse and know, you know, how far can that horse go through the levels, or how, you know, how far can that rider go through the levels. Every rider and horse, you know, the rider, of course, wants to always go to as far as possible, but, you know, we also have to take care of the horses. Not every horse makes a Grand Prix horse. Even though some horses could do movements, but they're not all become Grand Prix horses, and one has to understand that a little bit. But it does all come back to one thing. Good basics can never be missed. It takes good basics within each level of riding. First level has its basics, second level does, third level, when you go climb the ladders, the FEI horse has its basics. And if you don't train those properly, from the beginning on, you will always somewhere hit a bad spot and you realize, I missed that part. And now I have to, I pay for it now because I didn't take my time in that piece. So, you know, it's very important, I think, for teachers to allow the riders to grow, the horses to grow, but also we cannot have a big ego and then push the riders too fast to the levels and then ending up in the test. Yes, they show the test, but it looks muscled, it looks tense, because the relaxation is missing, the confidence of the rider and horse is not quite enough. So I think that is very important, that you create that confidence in the horse and rider before you send them down the center line.
Very sound advice. Thank you very much for that. And congratulations again on being inducted into the Rimmer Foundation USDF Hall of Fame. And thank you, as always, for taking the time to join us here on the podcast. We always appreciate it. And the very best of luck. We do hope you feel better.
Oh, thank you so very much. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me.
And you can find a list of all the inductees and more information about the Rimmer Foundation Hall of Fame on the website at usdf.org. Johan Hinneman, who is a world-renowned trainer and coach, will be the presenter at this year's Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference, taking place in Del Mar, California, on February 6th and 7th. Johan served as Canada's team trainer and German national coach alongside Klaus Baukenhol. His student roster reads like a who's who of Olympic medalists and national champions, including Stefan Peters, Kobe van Baalen, Marlies van Baalen, Ulla Salzgeber, Heike Kammer, and Alexandra Simons de Ridder. And we could learn something of his training theory here in this excerpt from the 2016 Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference.
Thank you for having me for your trainers conference. I'm especially honored that so many colleagues are interested in the things I think I try to do. And my whole career, my whole life in this dressage sport, I really found out sentence suppleness is the key to success. But I will explain that. Suppleness is the beginning that we horse have mentally and body-wise supple. But that's not the end. The end is to get total submission, total throughness with the horse, in the horse. And you see, submission for me is the result of suppleness and obedience. But I think you can have a horse supple, but it's not submissive. But if you have a submissive horse, it's for sure supple. So the whole thing really, it's the basic thing I always start with to think of. Only when a horse is physically and mentally supple, I think there the start is where you can start with the learning process, with the training process. Otherwise, you see, if you have difficulties with the suppleness, you cannot teach a horse any difficult thing. And for every horse, it's difficult to go straight, to go into the corner, and then that's the beginning. And when it ends up with our high FEI level exercises, then it's really difficult for the horses. But especially there, you need the suppleness. I personally think that the highest degree of suppleness has to be there when you do Piaf. And Piaf, I think it's, if not the most difficult exercise, but at least it's one. My idea of doing rising trot is that he thinks that he has to have that nose line, try to get that nose line in front of the vertical. I know that it's difficult in the beginning, but the reason is, see, when you will try it, if you try it at home, you just think, sit there, go straight, and try to get the nose line where you ride long and low in front of the vertical, which will not be happen all the time, but at the same time you get a driving seat. You get your body already in the way that you push the horse forward a little bit to the hand. And that's it's the whole idea that the horse is at the end looking for the contact to the bit. And for me, if I talk about contact, then it's not only the contact, the connection between the hand and the mouth of the horse, it's the contact we have to have is with the body, with the leg, and with the hand. And this is the complete three-point contact for me, which has to be, which you have to be looking for from the beginning. From the beginning, the first thing that the rider understands when you teach him things like that he can feel it. You see, it's the transitions are, when you read a test, and when you do a test, it doesn't matter what level, it's the most asked exercise. You see, when you come down center line, for example, it's a transition into the heart and it's a transition out of the heart, and there's only one heart. So that's always, you see, all the exercises are connected with a lot of transition. So this is, you see, what I said in the beginning, but we need a supple horse, but we need also a submissive horse. And I always started from the beginning that when you come into the arena, and we warm up the horses, that I think already about my end result, and I think already about a very submissive horse, then I have it absolutely supple too. Good. My next idea then is that we start to ask for more submission. Means, you see, that we have to think about an exercise where we get the horse a little bit more together. And in my eyes, it's that walk-canter transition. The walk-canter transition is maybe, in our training of the horse, the most important exercise. What is canter departure thing? That has to be really so fine and so nice and so easy that at the end, when I sit there and have my legs correct there and I get a little bit of tension in my back and have my weight on that inside seat bone, the horses have to react. And the reason for that is, you see, I think, no, I don't think, I know, it's right, that at the end, when we think about a period, a canter period on a center line, every stride of that canter period is a canter departure aid. You see, every stride, when we do the period, every time, you see, it's the same aid like the canter departure. And that's the most difficult exercise in canter. And we have to think that it is nice and fine and that it is very easy for us to do that and very easy for the horse. And the way you have to train the flying changes, that you first think about it in a theoretical way. And I always tell the people, or tell my students, the only moment where the horses can change is in that moment of suspension. We have a three-beat movement in the canter, and then a moment of suspension, and the better that moment, the higher that moment of suspension is, and the longer, the more time is there to change the lead. For that, you see, then you have to, the next idea is, or the next theoretical thing is you have to know or to understand is, you see, you can start the canter, the right canter, from collected walk. You can start the right canter out of collected trot. And you can start the right canter out of the left canter. Canter departure out of the walk, they have to really react. Easy canter departure out of the collected trot, and easy change of lead from left to right in that moment of suspension. This is what they have to understand. And I personally think that we have to think about an exercise where you do not make the horses think or bring them into the situation where they change the lead in front first. Means, you see, if you do a diagonal and ride directly to the wall, then you come in front, come close to the wall, and then when you use your aid then and start to change the lead, you see, because you come close to the wall, most of the horses start to change with the front leg first. And that is a situation which I really do not like, because I experienced in my training that when the horse get used to it, to be late behind, this is the most difficult mistake to correct. And second thought is in that time where they learn this, you see, I want to do the counter canter too, and I want not to disturb this, that they learned already this counter canter, and then bring them into the situation that they come to the corner or go on a bent line like a circle, that they use this and then go away from that collection and use that from to go away from the beginning of that collection. Whole thing together, keep the control of the hind leg, keep the control of the back, and do not allow him to fall apart and to drop his back and his belly. When you come back now to walk, make sure that you control the pole up with that long and low transition. With that long and low position, keep the control of the pole. Get the nose line out. Just think about the walk. You see, then you know why I want that transition, downward transition from trot to walk, really controlled. And this is why I really want that transition done that way. The nose line out, not low, really low the horse, and then reach out the front leg. But you see, even with the walk, I personally think walk is a movement without impulsion. But there's still some kind of, when we want to influence the judges, some kind of expression. I mean, expression you get in the walk, if the horses have a lot of ground covering from behind, step over with the normal four beat, but also reaches out with the front leg. You see, you can have an overstep like this, and when they are a little bit short on the shoulder, you don't get a high mark. This is why I also take care about the front leg.
And you can find out how to register for the Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference by emailing trainersconference@usdf.org or by calling the USDF office. That's 859-971-2277. And finally, a couple of reminders here that the applications are now being accepted for the USDF Instructor Trainer Certification Exam, being held on April 20th and 22nd, 2018, at River Ridge Stables in Potosi, Wisconsin. Candidate applications are due approximately 8 weeks prior to the exam. And you can find more information and specific deadlines and details by visiting the USDF website at usdf.org or checking the links accompanying the show notes of this episode. And the USDF's e-publication, Your Dressage, is now available on both the USDF website and the USDF app. Your Dressage is compiled of articles written by participants throughout the dressage community, people like you. So it's a chance for you to share your story. Visit the website at usdf.org to view past issues and consider submitting your own stories and photos for possible publication. Submissions can be sent to epubs@usdf.org. That's epubs@usdf.org. And that's our show for this week. Don't forget that whilst you're on the website, to check out eTrack for more educational information and resources. Follow us on social media at USDF for updates on when the podcast will be available. And you can, of course, download the podcast to any podcast player. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.